Well, good morning, everyone. So as we continue to navigate all the aftermath of the lightning strike and surge and identify all the different pieces of equipment that have gone bad, I want to thank Amanda and Haley both for just helping carry a lot of that load and working through all that together as a team and getting it all figured out. Also, as some of you know, our maintenance team, Jordan Hernandez, has been deployed for a year, and so he's been gone and kind of help pick up the slack with some of the stuff outside that Tracy's had a difficult time covering. I want to thank Stephen Stout and Ben for coming out and doing all the edging around the property to make it look nice and clean. Oh, okay. Somebody just ran across the back in the outside there, and I was seeing, and it was my son. So, anyway, they came out and edged and made everything look nice and clean and crisp lines and stuff. And Artie Weiser is taking on the task of mowing for the month of July, and Cindy is taking care of the weeds and getting that. If you would like to help with any of that stuff, like help Cindy get out there and dig into the weeds and all that, then I'm sure she would welcome that help. She's going to come out and do some spraying and those types of things, but I want to thank those people for helping make that happen. So it's been a huge help. So the early church leader, Paul, was nearing the end of his life. He was had been arrested. He was in a Roman prison and was awaiting his execution. And around this time, he writes a letter to a young protege by the name of Timothy. And he gives some final instructions to Timothy, and then he writes some final greetings to people. People were such an important part of Paul's life and ministry. There were, in the book of Acts and in Paul's letters, over 100 people's names listed as part of his inner circle of friends and fellow laborers and stuff like that. And so relationship and friends were a huge part of his life. And so it seems appropriate that the last part of what he would write would be to and about certain people in his life and all of that. And so last week we looked at his final words to young Timothy. This week we look at the final greetings that he sends to those people in his letter. So he says, "Do your best," and he's talking to Timothy, "do your best to come to me quickly, for Demas, because he loved this world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica." Demas is mentioned about three times in Paul's letters. He's first mentioned in Philemon as a fellow laborer. And then in Colossians, he's mentioned again just as a name, no descriptor behind it. And here, he's mentioned as one who deserted Paul. The language here is such that when Paul needed to count on Demas, when he needed him by his side because he's in prison and all that, Demas left him in the lurch. And Demas left him in the lurch because he was afraid. He was afraid of being associated with Paul. He was afraid of being connected with Paul. He was afraid that the same fate that awaited Paul might await him. And so he left. And he chose the comforts of home over the comforts of staying with Paul. And so that's the Demas that he writes about. Cretans has gone to Galatia. We don't really know much about Cretans. And Titus to Dalmatia. Titus had likely reunited with Paul in Necropolis over the winter. After serving the church in Crete and tidying up some things there. And now he has gone to Dalmatia to consider the missionary work that Paul had hoped to do the prior spring. He says, "Only Luke is with me." Luke was a first century doctor and historian. He was a traveling companion of Paul. Most scholars believe that Luke became Paul's traveling personal physician. Excuse me. And as such, he would have seen, or at the very least witnessed, and maybe even experienced some of the same punishments that Paul had experienced. He had tended to Paul's wounds when he was beaten. He had tended to Paul's wounds when he was shipwrecked. He had tended to Paul's wounds. And what a beautiful picture we have now that as Paul approaches his last days, the place that Luke believes he needs to be is in Rome at Paul's side. Such a beautiful picture of relationship. It was very common in the first century when someone was nearing their last days for people to come and visit for the last time. And we understand that because it's still something that we do today. Timothy would have tried to go visit. That's why Paul's encouraging, do your best to come to me as quickly as you can. Excuse me, to visit. And here he says, only Luke is with me. And he says, get Mark and bring him with you because he is helpful to me in my ministry. Mark is also known as John Mark. Mark is also the one who wrote the Gospel of Mark, one of the four accounts of Jesus' life. Basically, he wrote that having spent time with Peter and gotten firsthand accounts from Peter about what had gone on and put it into what we have in the Bible as the Gospel of Mark. John Mark accompanied Paul and Barnabas on the first missionary journey. John Mark is also the reason that Paul and Barnabas did not have a second missionary journey together. Somewhere along the way, John Mark got discouraged or got afraid or got whatever, and he abandoned the work and went back home. When Paul and Barnabas go to make plans to take a second missionary journey, Barnabas wants to take John Mark with them again, and Paul refuses. The dispute between the two of them became so sharp that they chose to go separate ways. Somewhere along the way, John Mark had re-engaged in ministry, reunited with Paul, and he and Paul had restored their relationship to the point that Paul requests Mark to be brought to Rome to see him before he is executed. And he describes him as someone who is helpful to me in ministry. I sent Tychicus, I can never pronounce that guy's name, to Ephesus. It's believed that he relieved Titus in Crete, and now he's being sent to relieve Timothy in Ephesus. He had been a lot of help to Paul in his ministry. One commentator said this about Tychicus, that a relief pitcher may not get all the glory, but he may help win the game. And it says that Tychicus is like a relief pitcher. Titus has gone to Crete and is ironing out the problems, and Titus just comes in and finishes the game for him. Timothy's in Ephesus doing the work there, and Titus just comes in and finishes the game for him. And then he says, when you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas, and my scrolls, especially the parchments. There's different opinions about what the cloak is, and we don't really know much about Carpus. We know that Carpus is obviously someone that Paul felt confident enough to leave possessions with that were important to him. Some people think that the cloak is like a travel bag that contains stuff. And if Paul had to leave Troas quickly, even under duress because of potential arrest and all that, then it would make sense that he could possibly leave that behind and then need it. Other people say that the cloak is more like a cape type of garment that has a hole in the center for the head, and so it went over the body. If Paul left Troas in the summer and had every intention of returning back and not wind up arrested and in a Roman prison for the winter, then there would have been no need for him to take his coat. He would just have gotten it later. And so now as winter approaches and in a Roman prison, he's requesting either his personal travel bag or his coat. I don't know which, but it would make sense why he would want either one. And then he says, and my scrolls, especially the parchments. What the scrolls and parchments are and what they contain is pure speculation. Some suggest that it contains copies of the Hebrew Scriptures. Some say that it contains a copy of the Septuagint, which is the Jewish scriptures, not just, but it would have probably at that time contained the Jewish scriptures in a Latin form. Some say that it held a collection of Jesus' sayings. Other people said it was Paul's own personal notes and journals and some of the letters that he had written. Other people say it's a combination of any and all of them. We just simply don't know. And he says scrolls and parchments. Based on the best research I could come up with, the difference between a scroll and a parchment is the material they're made of. And so it doesn't really make or break anything, and we don't really know. Some scholars say that Timothy is requesting the scrolls and the parchments for his own personal use, for his own personal studying. Some say that he is requesting the parchments to hand them off, to give them to Timothy, to give them to Titus, to give them, to those people that would then carry on the mission of inviting people to follow Jesus after Paul's execution. What one scholar kind of made me laugh about this, because he says, as to the character and contents of these documents, which Timothy is requested to bring, we are, of course, entirely ignorant. It made me laugh, but because we just don't know. And we can speculate all we want, but we just don't know. And then he goes on to say, Alexander the metal worker did me a great deal of harm. The Lord will repay him for what he has done. A couple of different Alexanders have come into play before. There was a silversmith in Ephesus who caused Paul all sorts of problems because Paul's message infringed upon his business of making shrines to the goddess Diana in Ephesus. There's another Alexander that's included in the first letter to Timothy in Ephesus that had been excommunicated and restored, and he may possibly be throwing out his personal grievances against Paul. It may be one and the same. We don't know. But the point that's being made here is that Alexander did Paul a great deal of harm. And as Paul nears the end of his life, he doesn't have to worry about making sure Alexander gets what's coming to him for all the problems that he caused. He said Alexander will get what's coming to him. It's just going to be God's to repay, and it's not mine to repay. And in some ways, what a comforting thought to think about some of the stuff that we hold on to. Some of the stuff that we hold on to so tightly, wanting to make sure that someone gets what they deserve before they die, or before we die, or before this is brought to closure, or whatever. And Paul's mindset is, I don't have to worry about that. It's God's to take care of, and God is going to take care of it, and he's just able to let that go. And I wonder how many things in our lives we would be well served to just be able to let go of. You too should be on your guard against him because he strongly opposed our message. Basically, Paul's saying here, if Alexander came after me and caused me all sorts of problems because of the message, and you're carrying on that same message, don't be surprised if he comes after you. So just be on your guard and be prepared to deal with him. He says, at my first offense, no one came to my support, but everyone deserted me. May it not be held against them. When the phrase first offense is used here, it's likely that it's a preliminary hearing in this second arrest and imprisonment. There are some scholars that speculate that Nero, the emperor of Rome, is indeed the one presiding over Paul's trial. Most scholars, however, tend to believe that it's just a more common Roman magistrate and it's not Nero. Again, that's something that we don't know. It was common that during a preliminary hearing, character witnesses would come to the court and they would testify and give witness about the accused. And no one came to Paul's defense. No one came during this preliminary hearing to share any character witness for Paul. It was indeed a dangerous time to be a follower of Jesus. It would have been a dangerous time to associate. The Jewish people had warned Paul for a long time that many people were talking against the sect of Jesus, and it would be a dangerous endeavor to continue down this path. Things really heated up around 64 AD, around the Great Fire of Rome, which Nero used followers of Jesus as the scapegoats for, had many of them tortured and many of them put to death simply because they were followers of Jesus, and he wanted to blame them for the great fire of Rome, which was not their fault. This is probably taking place around 67 AD. So it's possible that some of the tension and all that may have calmed down or eased up a little bit. But for whatever reason, when Paul needed people most, when Paul needed people to come to his defense, everyone deserted him. Nobody stood up for him. But then notice what he says, may it not be held against them. When Jesus was hanging on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Just as Jesus didn't want it held against those people for what they were doing to him, Paul doesn't want it held against these people who deserted him in his greatest time of need. And one of the things that struck me about this is that even when it's hard, even when it's tough, even when we'd rather do something else, in these types of instances, what Paul does here and what everyone who is followers of Jesus should do is we should just simply do what Jesus does. Just as Jesus didn't want it held against, Paul doesn't want it held against. And I wonder how much of things in our life would be better if we could just find a way to do what Jesus would do. But the Lord stood at my side and gave me strength. When Paul was discouraged in Corinth, the Lord stood at his side and gave him strength. When Paul was arrested, when Paul was put in prison, when Paul felt alone, when Paul felt abandoned, when Paul felt as if everyone had deserted him, the Lord stood at his side and gave him strength. Even in the times where Paul felt most alone, Paul was never truly alone. He says, he gave me strength so that through me the message might fully be proclaimed and all the Gentiles might hear it, and I was delivered from the lion's mouth. The delivered from the lion's mouth was a common proverbial saying, meaning someone who had been rescued from danger. A lot of people believe it goes all the way back into the Old Testament Jewish history when Daniel was rescued from the lion's den. The lion was almost always portrayed as a symbol of ferocious strength. And in this instance, it could be Nero himself. It could be the Jews who opposed him. It could be the way that he was arrested. It could be his impending attack against him. And it could be any or all of a combination of them. Paul is without question experiencing a challenging and a difficult time, a very difficult season. And he said that the message might be fully proclaimed. As Paul stands before